Hello, Buggy fans. We are back with yet another season of Shoot the Shit. And if you can believe it, I can't believe it. We are in our fifth season of this podcast. That's right. If Shoot the Shit were a CMU student, it would be taking what we all know and love as its buggy year, the fifth year, and we are going as strong as ever in this fifth season. We got stories from all across the history of buggy, different topics, characters, all the stuff you've grown to know and love, bringing you the characters, the stories behind the scenes of this sport. So we appreciate you all tuning in once again, and get ready, buckle up your safety harnesses, because it is time to shoot the shit. What is up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode. Sorry, I was trying to figure out a fun nickname for our fans, like Beehive or Swifties or whatever. And anyways, I don't think that one's gonna stick. But we are coming back stronger than a 90s trend, because that is this week's topic. We are talking about the late 90s in buggy. We have members of both Spirit and Sigma Nu from that era, really just kind of talking about what was buggy like back then, taking a trip down memory lane, talking about culture, rivalries, trends, and getting into all kinds of fun stories and hijinks. I think this is a really great episode in terms of just seeing some of kind of the culture and camaraderie that everyone had from back then, and just a real hoot. We'll give a brief warning at approximately 51 minutes through 56 minutes. If you have kind of a sensitive stomach, don't like scatological humor, pranks, any kind of that stuff, I would recommend skipping. And if you're into that, stick around till the 51st minute, because I think you will enjoy it. But all in all, a really fun romp here talking about the 90s on Shoot the Shit.
I'm Abby Sullivan, graduated in 98. I was the second place men's spirit driver in 96 and the winning spirit men's driver in 97 and 98. And I was also co-chair with Carl in 98 when he got back from Dean's vacation. And yeah.
Ouch.
I'm Carl Knott. I was SEC Hill 2 men's C team in 95. I was a flagger and sort of mechanic for Spirit in 96. I was head mechanic for Spirit in 97 and mechanic co-chair, I guess you would say, in 98. Graduated in 2003 due to a variety of reasons. And I was head judge in 2001.
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention. I drove for SDC. That's a story we could tell. I drove for SDC as a freshman, and I dragged Carl over to Spirit with me when we were sophomores. Carl and I met. We were in the same orientation group, so we met on the first day.
Abby, you're gonna find this funny, but I never knew that.
It's not a thing I talked about, but I could tell you the story why. That is a pretty good story. If you want to talk about heat selection stories, it's a good story.
All right. I'll go next. Hi. Raj Varani, Sigma Nu Buggy. Part of Zoo Buggy from 95 to 2000, graduated in 2000. I was an architect, so that extra year, got me an extra year buggy, which was good for me. Not so good for my wallet, but. and happy to be here. So happy
cool. To chat. Hopefully you've recovered by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I'm Ian McCullough. I, was also, a Sig Nu guy. I got there in 95 and I also didn't make it out till 2000, but I was not an architect. I had the buggy year, as they say.
Right.
And I don't know. I would argue that I was the lead on building Jibatis, which now lives in my basement.
Really? That's where it is. That's great.
Yep. After the pan delaminated.
Yeah, you were the lead on that for sure. If the pan delaminated.
You got the shirt and everything.
Nice. Very nice.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I appreciate all y'all joining today.
You know, kind of really just trying to take a step back, talk about, you know, I think this was kind of one of the most competitive, kind of exciting times in buggy history. Obviously, lots of stories, all that. But I guess if y'all just kind of want to take me through what was the landscape of buggy like there in the kind of latter half of the 90s, why did you end up picking your teams? I know, Abby, right, you mentioned you were initially SDC and then you and Carl switched over, but I guess just kind of paint us a picture of what was the landscape of buggy like back then.
Well, I mean, I would say that it was very different for women than for men. Danny and I went to every party and were friendly with every team. And I don't think it was necessarily the case for the guys, but Carl and I started out with SDC as freshmen because we lived in Henderson, and the SDC buggy room was in the basement of Henderson, and like half the people that lived in that building were the SDC crew. But yeah, I mean, I really wanted to be a mechanic, and I wanted to know how to be a mechanic, and SDC did not teach drivers how to be mechanics back in that day. And then the reason that I left SDC, and as I said, dragged Carl with me, whether he liked it or not, was, I think he was okay with it, but I drove SDC Men's C in 95, and they built Rage that year, and I guess
Sambuca, actually.
Oh, Sambuca, sorry, that's right. Yeah. Sambuca, you're right. But what they did not do was build a new steering for the new buggy. So I was driving Escargo or Terrapin and sharing a steering with the new buggy. And they did my selection for my heat for Men's C for race day based on the amount of time that they felt that they needed to switch the steerings without the safety chair noticing. I'm not going to name any names, but if anybody wants to look up who these people are, go for it. I don't care. And so this was my freshman race day. And I remember course walking on race day going, because I was it was somebody fast. I can't remember who. And Cap Sig in that like big rattle trap thing that they had in the late 90s. But their Hill One was like an absolute monster. And I remember saying like the morning of race day, those guys are going to go over the hill first and I'm going to catch them. And I was talking to the chairman at the time saying, what am I supposed to do? And he was like, it's fine. No worries. You'll be fine. And I did catch the other buggy in the chute, but I had to tap the brakes, lost some momentum. And basically Carl did not get to push, you know, to this day, can't imagine. No, because Carl, no, you were Hill 2. You were not Hill 3.
I was the last person to touch you. And it's, wait, I mean.
Who?
Somebody. I deprived somebody of the ability to push because I went back into my line coming out of the chute and basically got pitted by the other buggy, spun around, and ended up on the Flagstaff side of Hill 3 in the grass. And got out of the buggy, and I was like, this is exactly what I told you was going to happen. Yeah, so that's, like, why I was thinking about heat selection, because, like, that was a race that was doomed before it started, and I did not like the way SDC handled that, and Spirit let women be mechanics, even back in the Stone Age, and so I jumped.
Was that when we were in school?
Yeah, it was 95.
Yeah, yeah. We were fall of 95.
Oh, you guys are fall of 95, so not yours, 96. Well, shoot, because, like, Abby, you're saying that about the steering thing, and I like, in 96, they swapped, for Spirit, second day, they swapped your steering, right? We had to swap your steering because the tire got balded on the first. Remember that?
No.
You were having a freaking breakdown in the truck. That was when they balled, because we had pneumatics at the time and our women's team won. Yeah. We had to swap. We had both the same A team. Women's A was men's B, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was Shaka, right? And so how did that go? Because it was some sort of thing where they swapped your steering on right before the race. And I remember you were freaking out, and Kate was just like, I don't know if she was smoking in my head. She was probably chain smoking while doing it. But she was going to be okay. I'm going to kill everyone in this truck. Carl, get the hell out of here. I mean, because she was awesome. But I'm sorry, oh, wow, that must have been this whole thing. It's last year I was with SDC and they did the steering thing and now I'm getting screwed because it's like, anyway, I didn't realize that was probably why you were breaking down at that point. Amongst, sleep deprivation and stress and all, too.
The only thing I remember about 96 was coming in second when everybody thought men's B would be, I want to say CompuBookie said, Spirit men's B would be sixth or eighth or something like that. And then, exceeding expectations is an exciting way to end the weekend.
That was fantastic. I mean,
yeah.
Totally. Before we maybe go on some of those, I guess Ian and Raj, y'all want to talk a little bit about Signu and kind of what things were like over there in your time.
Raj, you want to go first?
Sure. I'll go first, and Ian will add a fair amount of color to whatever I say, I'm sure. So, it was good. I think in our house we had there was an energy. I think it was maybe a little lopsided with the pride in the equipment. So, mechanics, chickens, we called them, were just gung ho, diehard. We always kind of had a few really capable pushers, but it struggled to put five together to really, knock it out of the park. So, we always felt like we were in contention. But then we saw Spirit coming, in the years that we were there, just killing it. And where we knew we had the better buggy, we knew it. It was tough to kind of, Ian and I running that organization, just, and I say that with drop times and just stuff like that. We just knew we had a really competitive piece of equipment.
And just on the measurables, they were better. But there was a lot of, the mechanics and Spirit were putting a lot of love and attention. But the measurables, definitely, your buggies were better.
Well, and then, we always tried to keep up to that high standard. I'd like to think that we from the mechanics side, we were able to do that, and we had some bright spots, so it was good drivers, good some really strong individual pushers, but
the prettiest buggies. You guys had the most beautiful buggies.
They were pretty sexy. I mean, I would say they were that was part of it. That was the mood around us. We always felt like we're kind of middle of the pack because we just weren't pulling it all together at the right time at times. But Ian, what do you think?
Well, I do remember going to West Penn Laco and saying, yeah, I need black lacquer. And they're like, what are you talking about? And I said, yeah, the stuff from the 50s, that's what we want. And, they said, yeah, okay, we'll have it on Tuesday. So I do know that our house felt very proud of the looks, and we, I think we won People's Choice a few years.
And design.
Yeah, and design. And, I know we had some very admirable free roll times, and we had amazing drivers, absolutely amazing drivers during my time there. I'm sure we'll talk about them as things go on here, but it was a time of technical excellence and driver excellence. Signu hasn't had pusher excellence since the early 80s. and it really is true. It's just you know, we always used to joke that if we could have a hybrid team of beta pushers and Sigma Nu buggies and drivers, we would dominate.
Oh, I remember there being like several conversations about the idea of like hybrid teams, like getting the beta pushers to push something other than a beta buggy. And everyone was like super resistant to that idea because it's like, that wouldn't be fair. Like, you know, if you had the football team pushing zoo buggies, like it would have been like, that would have been the end of it for everybody.
Yeah. I don't want to armchair quarterback it, you know, 25 years later, but I think that would have been a formidable team.
Yeah, I would correct one thing, Ian. You know, the excellence of our pushers was maybe not so much on the course as much as the excellence of their ability to have fun in the house. So, mm-hmm. And that's what we recruited on most of the time. So it was, you know, it was a situation where I think we did, you know, the best we could with the folks in the house, and some of those folks put a lot into it. But yeah, we weren't recruiting for pushers. That wasn't.
No. You know, when we were freshmen, we had a bunch of track stars on the push team. You know, we didn't really make it happen, I think.
What was the highest place you guys got while you were?
While I was in school, the highest place we got in men's was fifth. And I was not able to make it to awards.
Yeah. I recall that. Well, no, I don't really recall, but I recall that.
I don't recall that either. But I was told.
There have been like conversations in the years since I've graduated. Carl, you remember that time that we went to that Pica party in like 2000, 2001, 2000 at Docks on the roof? And like you got there before I did. And I was like, oh, Pica is going to beat the shit out of Carl. He is like the least like unobtrusive. Like you were like standing in the corner, like hoping that nobody noticed you. But we ended up talking to like Bordick and Jim Satil and Rick Simmons that night. And they were telling us, they were like, oh yeah, in like 97 and 98, we knew Spirit was going to win. You guys had it all together. You had all the pieces. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I remember those conversations because, well, they were like, when they thought that 98 was like the perfect year because, like, they were like, we were really together. You guys were super together. And, like, it was a really great competition. And I'm like, dude, you don't realize, like, my credit card was declined. We almost didn't have a truck on race day. Yeah. Because, like, we were, like, hanging on by our fingernails because with Dean's vacation, we couldn't recruit. It was brutal.
Well, that was the year. So fall of 97 was when the roof literally caved in our buggy room. And we were displaced out of our buggy room for several months. So we did not build in 97. The wind, like, we would normally build over winter break. And we didn't build in the 97-98 school year because we weren't sure if we would have a space.
I was on vacation.
Yeah.
Hanging out in the fringe buggy room.
Hey, Abby, didn't you build one in your garage?
Who?
On Beechwood? No?
No, we build other stuff. We didn't build a buggy.
I outsourced all my extracurricular building. If you want to, we could have an interesting podcast if you want to talk about corporate involvement of buggy.
Now.
I do think it is interesting, right? Because like I feel like the Pica Spirit rivalry kind of defined the 90s a lot and kind of right,
it training, really did.
Training years back and forth. And I think also kind of an interesting thing too, right? Where, right, you couldn't do a Signu Beta thing. But right, like Spirit, you could kind of recruit. However, was there, you know, kind of, because now I think there's a lot of animosity as much as anyone cares about buggy these days between kind of like Greeks are, you know, limited to who can be on a team. And now we see SDC win all the time because they can just get whoever, like with some of that feeling.
Well, when they're not DQ'd.
Right.
Well, I mean, I always thought that how to say, I mean, I thought the advantage for fraternities was that you've got, you know, you've got a structure that will continue from year to year. Cause like Buggy is so weird.
Yeah.
Cause like you're only there. I think we were all there. Well, maybe Abby wasn't, you were only there for 4 years. The rest of us were involved for like more than 4 years. But even then it's like the first year you're kind of like, oh, Buggy, interesting. I'll try this. And then you might get obsessed second year. And by the, you don't really know anything by the fourth year. And then you're gone. So like you lose all this institutional knowledge. So I was like, well, the great thing with frats is like they've got institutional knowledge they can hand down because guys come back.
And they can force people to wake up in the morning. And
yeah, right. You can force people to do things. But then it's like, well, you know, how do you motivate people to enjoy something that you're like beating them to do? You know, that's kind of tough. So I was like, you need to have like an independent.
Non-hazing fraternity.
Non-hazing.
Well, I know. But I'm like, you know, mentally abusing. Right. Sure. So I'm like,
no, not even mentally hazing. We were on, our fraternity is established on the principle of non-hazing.
Okay. That's cool. I mean, but you know, as an independent, we're like, they can make people come out and flag and sweep and stuff. Or we have to like convince someone to get out at 4 a.m. to do this because they want to and stuff. So it was like, I always thought that frats would have the be able to continue on. Right. And not lose things. So I always thought like pioneers or CIA or fringe were because they're just kind of like, we're an independent and we do Buggy and maybe some other stuff. But I figured if they had a couple of bad years, they could just go away. But I was like, well, Spirit's good because we are Spirit. We're an independent org, so we can recruit from everybody. But also we have a reason to exist. And I always thought SEC was kind of strange because I don't exactly know what they do other than sell sheets, right? but they all have money, it's kind of annoying. And well, isn't that how they get their money is from selling sheets, right?
And the door, like the fees.
The dues, yeah, I think, like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I can understand affirmative action for SEC is important, but I don't think they need that much money because I remember like dying for like, my credit card got canceled, right? Or I got declined.
Oh, yeah.
I was, like, $700 limit on my, whatever, MasterCard, I want to get a truck. But I mean, I was like, they could have some interest and stuff. And they'll be around because it's, you know, I don't even know why. The young, what is this, the Men's Dorm Association, what they were originally? I don't know. SEC is kind of weird to me.
Yeah,
because like the independents can recruit everywhere, but I always thought the problem is that they wouldn't have continuity from year to year. You lose all this institutional knowledge in an independent, and you're just bleeding it as a Buggy organization. Cause like by the time someone knows anything, they're graduating and then you're trying to train people. You're constantly churning people in a volunteer environment. It's rough as hell.
Hey, I think I knew something before my senior year, but I was here for 5 years.
You think you know everything about everything all the time?
Oh, come on. What are you, my psychiatrist?
No, but I do think, I mean, like the Spirit loss of institutional knowledge when we got displaced from our Buggy room in 97, like 98 was the last winning year for Spirit Men's for a long, you know, and they were less competitive for many years after that. And it really was that like break in institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
It was, like what happened for those who don't know, Josh Steiff and I were in we were doing like our pre-fall, like clean up and organize in the Buggy room. I was like sweeping and there was a Spirit like general body meeting happening in the living room above us in Spirit House. And all of a sudden the ceiling literally like boop, like dropped by a couple of inches and a bunch of like plaster and stuff fell on Josh and I, and we shit our pants, ran out the door. Wow. And like called campus police. And so they emptied out and we went upstairs obviously and told the people that were up there, like they noticed what happened, but I don't think they realized how bad what happened just happened. And then for a long time, the university wouldn't let us in. They tried to convince us to store our buggies in those like mesh cages underneath the
bleachers
in the stadium.
Yeah.
Where you would have been able to see them. And they were like, it'll be fine. We'll lock that. And I was like, it will take 7.5 minutes for somebody to come by here and cut that lock off and steal our buggies. I was like, are you kidding me?
No, it would take 30 seconds.
They would have at least waited until we walked away. But yeah, it would have been like, that was not, it was a non-starter. So we didn't have a space. We were like holding it together. Carl was on Dean's vacation. I did not drive a single roll in the fall of 97. I went for as the winning driver, winning men's A driver from race day of 97 until like 4 or 5 weeks before race day of 98 without driving.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, I think you need to build every year. I mean, if anyone's listening from home, build every year. Always be building.
Always be building.
And don't get yourself into a technological corner where it's so difficult to build that you can't build every year. That's a problem.
I will say building Jubatus was one of the greatest experiences of my life. You know, it challenged me. It rewarded me. It was an amazing buggy that was not meant for a long life, but it was an amazing buggy at the time. It was built for a specific nameless driver, and they killed it, you know, as much as we could with the pushers we had.
Yeah, no, that sort of passing down of knowledge may be an advantage. And to be able to shake down your alumni for money to do something big is also, you know, definitely a strength for the fraternity organizations. Yeah, I barely remember building that buggy with you, Ian, and but it was a good summer. It was a good summer.
No, I mean, we had a lot of fun. I always said that if Sigma Nu pushers could stop smoking cigarettes, other things, drinking beer, and, you know, branching out even from there, that we would have had a much better chance at placing. But I'm happy with what we did, and I love Jubatus so much that it's in my basement.
So the cigarette that we cast into it is still in there, right?
As far as I know.
Yeah, we did have the advantage. Our pushers were very serious athletes. There were times when there was like a big spring, whatever, like national track something, NCAA. Like there were times where we did not have all the pushers that we wanted to, because they would be at these big track meets and stuff.
Same with us.
Yeah, sure.
No, we did have a year where we had like track stars.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that. Did any of them end up actually pushing for you?
In off years, but yeah. Not when there was a track meet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I thought was interesting, kind of talking about, them trying to move you to those cages there, and like obviously not a good idea for a lot of reasons, but like what was kind of the secrecy and like espionage culture like? Was that stuff that teams were really trying to do whatever they can to find out all those little things? Or,
well, I think Carl and I were not that into the secrecy because it was too much fucking work. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, we were just trying to, like the way I remember it, like we were just trying to keep the wheels on the wagon. Like Pika had enough resources to like care about that stuff. And I remember Carl doing stuff to like mess with them. Carl, do you remember the time you were like rewrapping Haraka and you were like out in the driveway or on the sidewalk outside of Spirit House sanding? Yeah. And you were doing that quite specifically to mess with, certainly a Pika would go by sometime that afternoon, because they would be like, they tried to keep really close tabs on everybody else's times. So they would always think that like we were like renaming buggies or like lying about which buggy was which to mess with their timers and stuff like that. And we were like, oh man, you give us way too much credit for for like having
all of our buggies look identical.
Yeah, they do. I mean, ours did too. Yeah. Like there was something about every buggy, like the fairings would be a little different or the tail would be a little different. Like we knew the difference between all of our buggies. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure I could walk in today and look at the shapes of all of them and know which is which. But I think that most people wouldn't. Yeah, and they like. Okay, so I do have one espionage story.
Sure.
Again, a heat selection story. So, like, when I was thinking about like my best stories, heat selection is an odd theme. But so 97, I was driving Spirit Men's A. We were the 12th heat, and Pica Men's A was the 11th heat. And I was not at the chairman's meeting for that heat selection, but the chairman came back and said, "Oh, we made a Spirit Men's D team for heat 11." And I was like, "The hell are you talking about? During heat 11, you will be paying attention to me." But we had pneumatics still back then. We did not have treated rubber wheels. So like we could put wheels on the buggy a day before. Like Carl would like, you know, inflate the wheels to 180 and then go sit on the back of the truck and smoke cigarettes. And yes. And so they made up, like during the heat selection meeting, a Spirit Men's D team with the full intention of just messing with Pica. Carl, do you remember this?
I pushed the hill too, so yeah, I remember it.
You did. Again, I will not name the guilty parties here, but so during heat 11, I like they well,
right.
loaded.
So right, we had half the mechanics were pushing. Yeah. Heat 11 before our men's A team was rolling at heat 12.
Yeah.
Which was also an interesting choice.
Should have been a clue that something was afoot. But Pica had treated wheels. They could not park at the start line. It was, you know, their wheels were degrading by the second. So the whole plan from the second that this was hatched was to false start. You can false start twice. Until or the third false start is when you get DQ'd. I think that they spent like hours practicing false starts that week, so basically to force Pica to sit on the start line.
That's not entirely true.
Yes, it is.
That's not true. We didn't practice anything. We didn't practice that. I talked to the chairman. I guess we're not using names. I talked to the chairman. I was like, "Hey, do you think you should false start?" He's like, "Shut up." I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Oh no, I forced the plan out of him because
it was not a wide-reaching conspiracy. It was a lone chairman.
I knew what the yes, it was. It was
everyone knew it was gonna happen, right? I yelled, I thought rather convincingly from Hill 2, like, "Come on. Don't do that. Push the buggy, you know, don't screw up," basically.
Yeah, and the Spirit truck, I don't know if the trucks still park in the same place, but the Spirit truck was directly behind the start line, like centered. So I could hear all of that from inside the buggy. Like I was loaded and ready to go for my heat. And I just put my head down and just listened to what was happening. And I was like, "Please don't get in a fight. Please don't get in a fight." Like, because Pica had to have understood what was happening. And I mean, I have no idea how much making Pica sit on the start line for an extra minute or two affected their wheels, but we won that year.
We had them like by a second and a half that year. It was
like a second and a half.
They have a bad year.
That's not a big enough difference to argue that you're icing them.
Yeah, yeah. I thought we had them anyway. It was not that big of a deal. Yeah. I mean, I didn't think we had to do it. And plus, then I had to run down from Hill 2 to, like, get the buggy out.
Yeah.
Well, smoking.
It is pretty awesome. I like the line of thinking, though. That's pretty good.
Like, my understanding was that was, like, literally hatched in an opportune moment in the heat selection meeting, in the chairman's meeting. They were like, "Oh, hey, look, there's a space in Pica A's
in heat 11.
Let's take that."
I would think so. I was probably in the buggy room. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you were there.
Maybe playing Magic. I don't know. I was probably not studying. Probably in the buggy room at that point.
Oh. Our heat selection was always pretty weird because we'd have quite slow pushers on our B and C team taking them up the hill, and then the buggy always would catch up and pass, and you're trying not to time that pass in the chute, you know, and trying to time where that happens so it has like the least impact on the line, whatnot. But
we had pushers that were doing their best.
But like that was one. Okay, so Ian and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago. That in 2001, so this was years after I graduated, and it involved teams that I never drove for, buggies that I never touched, and I knew there was going to be a crash in that heat. Ian sent me the heat selection. It would have been 2001, and it was Sigma Nu B and Phi Cap A and somebody else, KDR, something like that. I think it, yeah. And Ian sent it to me like an email, and I emailed him right back, and I was like, circle heat number, it was like whatever it was, heat number 7, this is where the crash is. And then on race day I was like, because I knew it, like I was like, Phi Cap's gonna get over the hill faster, that Sigma Nu buggy is gonna catch up, like it's gonna be like 2 seconds behind going over the hill, it's gonna catch up about, you know, just sometime between the stop sign and the first flag. And I went out, I remember, yeah, I went out into the middle of the chute, and I like drew a circle with my foot, and I was like, the crash is going to happen right here. And Ian was like, no, it's not. No, it's not. And then I think that the Sigma Nu buggy actually made it through, but there was like spinning and touching like all three buggies. And then I went, ha, in your face. And then I turned around and, the whole, that those were rough years for Phi Cap. Like there was like several years in a row where they like didn't make it through. Like it was, there was a lot going on. And I turned around and
they were one of the last teams to hang on to pneumatics.
Yeah. And they were all standing behind me while I was going, haha, I was right.
Oh, yeah, that was the year I was at Judge, and it was a carnage the first day, but it rained out.
Yeah.
And I can be a little serious at times. And I remember I was so pissed about the whole thing because, like, it was just terrible selection. It's just terrible. Like, across, I mean, that was not the only wreck. There was multiple ones that whole first day. So I was like, because I think the junior, however sweepstakes works, there's like the chairman, then there's like the little person, like not the little person, but I mean, the littler chairman, junior chairman. I don't know, whatever, right?
Yeah, what do they call it?
Edit this or something. I feel like a crazy person.
The youngster. They call it the youngster.
Yeah, the youngster.
Youngster. That's close. Right. So there was like, the little one was a pike. And so I was like, get me your chairman and have him bring his binder with all the times and meet me at wherever the pre-meeting for the next day was going to be. Because we had like a, you know, there's the meeting when we got DQ'd. That meeting. But it was in a different building than when we got DQ'd. But I was a judge that time. So anyway, I was like, come here, bring me those binders. We're going to reseed this whole freaking thing because it's a total disaster. And you know, we reseeded stuff. I remember SCCA was by themselves because I couldn't make it fit any other way. And I wasn't being vindictive. It wouldn't fit any other way. And someone was going to have to be by themselves. And I think they missed the push bar. And I was kind of like, okay, guys, I'm sorry. But you did miss a push bar. You probably shouldn't be rolling today. So... sorry-ish, but I don't think I said sorry because I'm kind of an asshole, but that was what we did. Because yeah, I'm like, this, it was not supposed to really be like that much racing, right? We don't want to be having accidents constantly, having someone get hurt and like destroy buggy, right? So I wish people were a little smarter about that, but the only people that have that technology is Pika.
Heat selection is why there are crashes most of the time.
Yeah,
like it's like, I mean, it's very strange to me, like, even now, I remember it being strange at the time, but it's still strange, like, that there is a pass test, and that the pass test is so, like, prescribed and contrived, like, it's like, yeah, you do absolutely. This very safe pass test thing, and doing the pass test teaches you how to do a pass test. It gives you absolutely zero insight into how to not crash on race day. The only way to, you know, the best way to not crash on race day is to not be near other buggies, because you just cannot, like, I don't know. Doing heat seating based on like primarily hill one times is just dumb, because if the faster buggy has the slower hill one pusher, you're going to tangle up, and nobody tells the driver what to do about that.
Well, and the drivers have no visibility to the side or to the rear.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't know if you're being overtaken.
Yeah.
Okay, but Abby, were you ever overtaken?
I was never overtaken, no. I was not. I did the overtaking. I was never overtaken. But
I will say that nameless driver for Shigmanu was, if she realized that she was being overtaken, the other driver was in trouble.
Like, she would have gotten in their way?
I think, as they said in Days of Thunder, rubbing is racing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I would say elbows out might have happened, but that really didn't happen. I can't think of a time where we got passed. But like, also, like, I knew, you know, the downhill times for us at that time were just, they were tremendous. And like, we would prep our drivers in advance, like, this is gonna happen. And does it happen, you know, 3 seconds into the free roll, 15 seconds in, or as you're approaching, you know, the second flag, which is disastrous if it happens there. But, you know, but I really can't think of when we got passed on the downhill like that.
No, I didn't say we got passed. I said that
if that were to happen, it would be elbows out.
That is what I said. That.
Well, I mean, but passing is like the fun part of, like, it's fun if it works. I know. So my favorite race that I ever drove, and Carl's going to have a heart attack just thinking about this, was in fact an exhibition heat. And it was 97. I was driving Shaka for the sweepstakes push team. And like, we were supposed to have been in a different heat. And then like, some people didn't do their exhibition heats, so they like rearranged them last minute. And we ended up the same Kappa Sig buggy that I tangled with my freshman year was in that heat. It was like Kappa Sig alums, I think Fringe alums, and the other buggy was Junior, the one that looked like was like Tiger Stripes. And I was like, so these were like serious alum, or they thought they were serious alum pushers. So those two buggies went over the hill first, and I was behind. I was driving for the sweepstakes exhibition team, but I caught them both. I caught the Kappa Sig buggy like between the stop sign and the first flag, and then got back in my line to hit the second flag properly, and then passed the Fringe buggy like on the outside in the chute. And if anybody has the video of this, I will pay hard currency for it, because I've only ever seen it once. But the follow truck video, Carl was in the follow truck, and you can hear his voice on the video, and he's going, "She's not what she. What is she doing? What the fuck? What is she doing?" And it's like so funny. And it was like, I was just like, "Do do 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 do. Oh look, there's a buggy in my way. I'm gonna go around that one. Look, there's another one. I'm gonna go around that one." And it was so much fun. And like that was my favorite race ever. And Carl was so mad. There may have been threats of violence when we were done.
I was upset. That was our men's speed buggy. It did rain out the second day, but I mean, this was after the first day. We had, you know, exhibitions happen between first and second. I mean, if something bad happens, that's our men's B buggy.
Nothing bad happened.
I think B got like fifth or something. I mean, did well that year.
Well, there's also, you know, that year we got rained out to Sunday.
That was 99, I think, Stife's year, right?
Yeah, 99.
Or I'm sorry.
I think it's either 98 or 99.
What's 98?
Try to keep your pushers from drinking 3 days over Carnival and have them survive until Sunday. That was a disaster.
Yeah. I remember sitting in the heat selection meeting for Sunday and just being like, "I'm destroyed, people." Like, you know, I've been like partying hard for 2 days. You know,
okay, this is weird because like I was usually destroyed, but it was because I hadn't slept in like 4 days, not because I was drinking.
Well, yeah, I mean, that too.
Carl would not sleep for like the entire week of Carnival. And there would get to a point where he would like, he would shut down. Like he would basically like stop talking. And it was like, okay, nobody bother Carl. He just needs to like be completely focused on what he's doing. And he will like knock you back if you talk to him. We went to, there were at least a couple of years where we went to design competition with wet paint on the buggies. Like buggies, because we would roll black buggies during the during rolls and then paint them for race day, and they would get painted for design comp with fancy things. And yeah, that would happen at like 4 o'clock in the morning of design
half cured paint.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I rattle canned Fucra that one year, like at 5 a.m, just like, you're gonna do caution stripes or something. And I didn't, like, I almost didn't go to awards in 98, not as a protest, but because I fell asleep for like 6 hours and I was like, oh God, I got to get up and go. Like, really? I haven't slept in 3 days. It was,
I didn't yeah. make it to awards until I was an alumnus. So
I think I would represent Sigma Nu if we were lucky enough to get anything that year. So.
Well, 99 was the year we got fifth, right?
Was it? I thought it was earlier than that. I thought it was 97. That was the year I promised a time to the organization. We didn't even come close. I was just trying to motivate the team to like hit this 210. I guarantee it, if you remember that, Ian.
I do.
Wow.
That didn't quite work. Oh. For grasping at straws that year.
Yeah, awards in 98 were, that was really something, because that was the year that Spirit Women's A got DQ'd. That was the episode of this podcast where Madler and Stengel were talking about DQing. That was, Carl and I, that episode I think was a punch in the guts for both of us.
Yeah, like,
listening to them talking about how not entirely sure they were about that DQ was a lot. And Danny was my roommate and we were about to graduate. And I heard a rumor that that I moved out of our room.
Now, was that because somebody was calling your room on the phone?
That was a different weekend. Ian would call our room. He would call, like, there would be a weekend, like spring break or something, where for whatever reason we didn't have roles. And Ian would be like, I'm going to stay up all night. And then I'm going to call Abby and Danny's room 47 times in a row and wake them up and then tell them to. There was one time where you were like, hey, we're sitting on Flagstaff Hill drinking vodka out of a milk carton. Come hang out with us. And I was like, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. What are you?
Yeah, that was me and Evan Benoit.
Oh, God, from, yeah.
Sig Tau. So. You're probably smart to stay away from that.
Ian was so annoying back in the day.
Yeah. And I'm fully willing to admit it. You know, we were talking we had a text thread going on earlier today. I was a complete troll, asshat, asshole, pedant, like whatever you want to say, like, I was it. Like, I was the, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to self-aggrandize, but like the bad boy of buggy.
Oh.
I was banned from chairman's meetings despite being a chairman.
Yeah. Because Danny couldn't deal with you. She was like, nope, he can't come. Raj can come. Ian has to. Like,
Raj and I were co-chairs, and Danny was like, Ian can stay back.
Yeah.
I'm mediating. That was I didn't think that was part of the job, but that's what it turned into.
Yeah. Danny was a really good sweepstakes chair, and she also managed to like keep it all under control for her own sanity, because that's how she is. And Danny was, according to Ann Wichner, as of that point, Danny was the only sweepstakes chair to make Dean's List spring semester that she was sweep. Like, Danny did everything all the time and looked super cute while she was doing it.
Yeah, I like Danny a lot, and despite being banned from chairman's meetings and everything else, she was at my wedding. Yeah. So
turn around. Was there like a specific incident that got you banned, or like specific behavior, or was it just like we've had enough?
No, I think it was a pattern of behavior, as the law enforcement people say. You know, I always had something to say about everything.
Yeah, I think really what it was that chairman's meetings were like twice as long when you were there, because exactly. you had stuff to say and argue about for everything. And Danny was like, I don't have time for this, so you don't get to come. Like, without you there, chairman's meetings were like 20 minutes, super efficient, in, out, did what we needed to do and go.
I'm going to get to the most interesting chairman's meetings that I ever attended.
Tell us.
At Sigma Nu, we call this the poop smashing incident. So we had a guy, I'm not going to name him, but he was our dedicated sweeper. Right. So he swept every week, and the deal was he swept every week and he got to go home after sweeping. And, you know, he was a CS major, and so he was up most of the night anyway. And
he was a proud sweeper. Very proud. Very proud guy.
Yes. Yes. Very proud sweeper. Very effective. And one week at chairman's meeting, someone from SDC said, I think the section that Sigma Nu is supposed to sweep is not adequately swept. And so our guy had already gone home. So we had to, you know, conscript somebody else. And then we had to borrow brooms from other organizations and go and re-sweep it. So someone who shall remain nameless spent that week pooping into a brown paper bag.
Like multiple.
And rooms. Then at about midnight, the day before rolls, you know, the next day before rolls, we went out, poured the poop out, and then smashed it into the pavement by jumping on it a bunch. And then, you know, obviously we went home and washed our shoes off. But then we went to chairman's and said, SDC's section of the course is not adequately swept because it smells like shit.
We object to the quality of their sweeping job. This was,
yeah, I mean, it smells like shit over there. And their sweeper was like, well, I don't know, there's like poop smashed into the asphalt. Like, what do you want us to do? And I'm like, sweep your goddamn section. Like, these women are in buggies 2 inches off the ground. They're gonna smell the poop.
Have you no decency? Like,
have you no decency? Like, go sweep it. So that was one of the stories that I really wanted to tell on this podcast. I hope it's amusing.
Yeah, is that was that previously public knowledge to SDC? Did they know you guys smashed the poop?
No, not at all.
I can't imagine they did.
This is, I mean, I think this perfectly encapsulates the buggy experience, though, because we got people that are willing to work 7 days, you said like a full week of pooping into a bag, and then realize this plan and execute it to perfect. I mean, that's what I loved about buggy, where it's just like, you know, we're gonna do something that's kind of dumb, but we're gonna do it really, really well. So good job with the pooping and sticking with, because, you know, anyone else, a non-buggy person, like, we should poop in a bag and put it on the thing. I'm like, oh yeah, that'd be hilarious. But buggy people will poop in that bag.
the execution.
Write that on Facebook.
Well, and I didn't know about it until the smashing day.
Yeah, yeah. Like, the plan was being concocted, and I think Ian and I were just kind of kept out of the loop. And it's like, no one messes with our sweepers. Like no one messes with our sweepers. That's
great. Wow, that was... It might be that's one of the best stories I've ever heard on here. Wow, still recovering.
Well, I have to say, it, like I said, you know, we know it as the poop smashing incident. And believe me, Raj and I were incredulous about it when it happened. We were like, are you really going to do this? And that person was like, yeah, I'm really going to do this.
And I remember them saying, don't worry, it's not going to be on our line. That's great.
Oh. Wow, we have really spiraled out here. I'll just open it up to story time.
Well, I know Abby has a Wonder Boys story. I also have one too, but I'll let you go first.
Yeah, so that would have been fall semester of 97. They filmed the movie Wonder Boys on campus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For those who, it was, I mean, it was like a big deal. It was Robert Downey Jr., Michael Douglas. So it was Spider-Man, Iron Man, Ant-Man, father-in-law, and Katie Holmes were on campus. And this was for months. For the youngins, those will be the references that they get.
All right, but, like Tobey Maguire was in it.
I don't think they do capes where they used to do them. They're like outside the university center now, right? Is where they do capes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we back then we used to do capes, like basically the sidewalk between the library and Baker. Mm-hmm. And we were doing fall capes. There were a bunch of teams out there, you know, like fall cape, like it's like chaos, right? Because like people are coming from classes and somebody has to drag all their buggies over in the middle of the afternoon and all that kind of stuff. And there was a guy, he was like not very much older than us, like some production assistant from this movie was blowing fake snow all over the grass, like the whole cut. And this is like, you know, September. And he thought it was funny to keep blowing fake snow onto the sidewalk, which like, I remember Fringe was there. Like I remember Carson going inside and coming back out with like a ton of like paper towels from the bathroom in Baker and stuff. Like we were wiping fake snow off the sidewalk so that we could do our capes like this, like, the idea of having a movie filming on campus sounds really cool, but it turned into such a pain in the ass so quickly, and everyone hated it, and like it, everyone was so resentful. And so this kid, like he thought he was funny, like he was wearing like a Ghostbusters backpack that like sprayed like foam snow all over the grass, and he's doing this and like making a mess and knew he was making a mess and didn't care. And then somebody was walking, not affiliated with buggy or capes at all, like was walking down the sidewalk and like stepped like to turn toward Hammerschlag and like put one foot in this guy's fake snow. And this guy starts yelling at this person, like, don't step in the snow, blah, 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 blah. And I am not like a going Karen on people kind of woman, but I lost it on this guy. I mean, like he was a big guy, and I was like, I was swearing at him. I was like, we live here. We belong here. You don't belong here. And so what I did was I went dancing and swirling around in the snow. I was like kicking the snow and like running back and forth and like running circles around this guy. And like, he probably got in trouble and probably had to redo all the snow, but he fucking deserved that. And it felt good to do it. Like those people were so terrible to us the whole time. Wow. Yeah.
So I have two brief vignettes to share about that. So one time, I'm not going to describe the mental state that I'm in at this time in any detail, but we were headed over to the playground that's over the bridge in Shenley, and they had hired bikers. I don't know if they were Hell's Angels or not, but they were big, burly bikers in, you know, standard biker cuts and things like that. And they were like, yeah, you can't do that. And I'm like, just like Abby said, I'm like, the hell I can't. Like, I'm paying a shitload of money to go to this school. Like, I can do whatever the hell I want. I mean, plus the other thing was, is I was like 20 years old and thought I was right about everything. Right. And so, you know, eventually they let us through and that was fine. And then the other story is when they parked a couple of semis on the buggy course. And, you know, we had our sweepstakes had informed the production company that we had permits to shut down the road. And they said, oh, yeah, sure. We'll totally get these trucks off the road before your thing. And spoiler alert, they didn't. What they did do. So we called McGann and Chester, which is the big, you know, towing company in Pittsburgh. And they said, we don't have anybody that's able to tow a semi at 4 a.m. on Saturday. And I said, okay. And, you know, hung up and called another towing company. And they said, we don't have anybody that's able to tow a semi at 4 a.m. on a Saturday. And I called the third company and they said, look, I'm going to save you some time. The film production company has paid everyone that is licensed to tow a semi in a 50-mile radius to go on vacation. So you're not getting those semis out of here at all. And we just sort of like, you know, we gathered back at the, you know, the spot and said, well, what should we do? Should we slash their tires or, you know, spray paint, you know, vandalize the semis or, you know, what should we do? And eventually we decided to do nothing.
They had production trailers parked along the parking meter side.
Hill 5. Yeah, and I remember that.
It was so, yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, and just like the sort of the money of that, right? It's like, you know, we had some production assistant call around to every towing company in town and then, you know, get the name and phone number of everybody licensed to tow a semi, and then we paid for them to go on vacation.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's my Wonder Boys story.
I remember at one of the push practice, it probably was like 95, 96. We were out at push practice and there was a junior professor was driving out from the potato chip.
Ball.
Yeah. Right. That little access road that would come out that we would close. And this guy was flipping out that he couldn't drive off with his girlfriend or whatever. And an unnamed mechanic was like, if you don't chill out, I'm going to slash all of your tires with this knife. And the guy was like, it was this whole like thing. But eventually we let him out or whatever. I mean, they let him out. And so then like 15 minutes later, a campus police officer shows up and he's like, yeah, I'm supposed to be looking for a suspect. In a threatening manner with a knife. He's like, what do you got? They're like, and he's like, you want me to look for like 20, like a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old white male wearing a flannel and a hat. And it's like, and at the time in like 95, that is what that was everybody. So he's like, okay, this is not going to work at all. Good luck. So yeah. But yeah, we were like, we're going to slash this guy's tires because screw this guy. He's going to kill a person in a buggy. You know.
Well, do you also remember when we used to bounce cars for push practice?
Do you want to explain what bouncing cars is?
It's like physics, man, resonating and stuff.
Yeah, if you get a whole bunch of people to start rocking the car, it'll start bouncing. And so like on the up part of the bounce, you can start moving it so that it basically walks to the side and you can repark a car from the curb onto the sidewalk.
It's physics, man. It's awesome.
Far as I know, that's not a practice, but I am not.
Those were like beautiful collaborations between teams. Those were the moments that I think were actually pretty fun.
Plus, yeah. And I remember like when daytime running lights were just starting to happen. And because like in push practice, it'd always be like lights because people leave their headlights on. You want to turn them off because it would blind the drivers. And so we would just be flipping out on people with like a new car. Like, I can't turn off my lights. We're like, ah. Because everyone, you know, it's 2 a.m. and whenever it was. Was it that late?
Yeah, it was.
Good
yeah.
God.
I mean, we like started at midnight.
Do you remember the time the guy towing a hot dog cart got onto the course?
No.
It was during spring rolls. I don't know where he was going or why he thought he needed to be on the course, but he got out of his car and moved the barricade at the bottom of hill one and started driving up hill one. And I physically ran in front of the truck and people came from every tent and like this guy was surrounded in seconds. That might have been like spring of 98 because otherwise I would have been inside of a buggy. Like it was a time when like I should have been driving, but I just happened to not be driving that day because I was doing other stuff. And yeah, and like, oh my gosh, people were losing it.
I totally remember that. I forgot that it was a hot dog cart, but I do remember, you know, when we were just like, this is incredibly dangerous and stupid. And the guy was like hot-headed and would not. I mean, so it turned into a mob. I mean, it was like a mob of buggy people. It was great.
It was absolutely, yeah. Like, I mean, that's like teams coming together. Like, because his demeanor was that he was going to run somebody over. And like, and the instant like hive mind was like, well, you can't run us all over. So here we are. And and the spirit buggies were on the course. Renee was in the buggy. And I was like, not only is she our driver, she is also my friend and you shall not run her over. And yeah, and there were a bunch of buggies, like, you know, people would park along the curbs when people weren't doing full hill ones, like people were parked along the curbs and stuff to just go roll to roll. And it was, we managed to, I don't think there was any violence in that situation either. That guy, I think he pretty quickly realized he wasn't going to win and he backed up.
I guess maybe to kind of wind it down a little bit, rather than like, you know, just random story or something like that, like what did buggy mean to you or whatever, kind of like what was your big takeaway from this whole experience?
Well, I mean, like buggy people are my forever people. My first husband was a buggy person and I got married for the second time this past summer and I had 4 people stand up in my wedding. My daughter, my sister, Ian, and Danny.
Yeah. And Abby was also in my wedding.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is that, as I said earlier, I was an awful person in college. You know, I was a troll, an asshole, whatever you want to call me. But there was something enough charming that Abby and Danny and Debbie Keller and, you know, all these people have been friends of mine ever since. So, you know, I've always maintained that friendship is about shared experiences or shared suffering, right? And so, you know, being out at push practice at 3 a.m. when it's freezing cold, that qualifies as shared suffering.
Yeah.
And Abby has been one of my closest friends ever since. And there are lots of others.
Yeah.
I mean, the buggy experience for me, I think it was amazing because I think it helped kind of give me the realization that I really enjoy working on a complicated problem. And buggy is an incredibly complicated problem. And I got to work with people that were like, you know, you don't get to work in, you know, any students listening, you don't get to work with people that are all at Carnegie Mellon. Like, that quality of folks you can bounce ideas off of, you don't get that in the real world, if you will. Very rarely do you get folks that you can bounce these things off. And you can be in a room with like 8 or 10 people that are all buggy people, all going to Carnegie Mellon, and all have that quickness and drive. And it's very fantastic and rewarding. And it taught me I could build a crappy version of almost anything, and a good version of certain things. I can plumb my house. It's not that hard.
Right.
You know, I can build an addition. I mean, you know, you can do all this stuff. It's just work. That was the main thing.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, what you said is absolutely true. I think for me, it's just like the first time kind of being pushed to the limits on so many things, like whether it's managing your own time yourself, like you're saying, a complicated project that you just don't have much to compare it to before you get into it. Yeah, it starts, I think it starts forming like individuals, right? Like it starts forming the, taking the 18-year-old and turning it into, you know, what you're going to be being thrown into this fire. So for me, that was incredible. And doing it with friends, having fun, really with a bunch of people a lot smarter than me. It was a great, great experience. It pushes you to the limits where it takes over school. It takes over your finances. It takes over your time. It takes over like so many things. And you're like, I never even saw that about myself, right? That I could actually be that into something. And yeah, so it teaches new boundaries, which is pretty cool. So.
Yeah, I'm always, you know, I've probably said this 100 times, but I'm always so impressed with the fact that people from whatever it might be 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, we'll come back and have hours of stuff to talk about on this podcast related to buggy. And like that is just, I guess, a testament to kind of all that stuff. I don't know if there's any kind of closing thoughts or things anyone wants to add.
Well, I would like to throw it up to Jen Church. She was really great and a really good ombudswoman for buggy for years, and I think we miss her.
Yeah, I mean like it's hard to know like the alchemy of current years, like if our time was typical or special, but it really like the combination of people on, you know, on the teams and across the teams was just like, It's something you could just really not ever, like that I would never think that I could recreate. I've gone for years without really thinking that much about these stories. But like, once I start thinking about it, it's like, oh yeah, like, I mean, it's just like, we could go on for hours. Like, we didn't even talk about the time Carl set the buggy room on fire and I like psychically connected to the buggy room and called, and I was like, I feel like I should call and check in. And he was like, how did you know it was on fire?
Yeah, it wasn't really on fire. It was just smoke alarm went off. That's not a fire. That's just smoke.
It was a minor electrical.
You know what they say about where there's smoke.
Oh, okay. In this case, it was just
where there's smoke. The fire trucks show up.
They do that anyway.
Yeah.
And I was glad to hear that somebody replaced their steering in the middle of a race weekend, because we may or may not have replaced a push bar at one point between day one and day two.
Oh, yeah. Man, that was bad. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah, and I think that, like, I hope that the kids today, like, have as much fun as we had, Like the whole, like, you know, secrecy and insularity thing is just dumb. Just like, don't do that. Like have fun and like talk to other people. The experiences are better. The parties are better. You know, everything is better.
The mudslides.
Oh my God.
I guess if you want to briefly explain what the mudslides are.
Okay, there's a hill out front of what used to be the old Sigma Nu house, and I don't know what house is in there now.
1055 Morwood.
But it's 1055 Morwood Avenue. And we used to, when we headed out on Saturday morning at 3 or 4 in the morning with the U-Haul, we would put a garden hose out on the front lawn, running down the hill. And then when we got back from races, people would strip down to their undies, if not further, and, you know, sit on their butt and slide down the hill. I still have scars on my butt from it.
I have some scars on my back, yeah.
I have a picture of, so when either Danny or Debbie was chairman, they had the loaner race day pickup truck from the dealership. And I think it was Bootsy that drove us. Like we all, like Bootsy was clean for some reason. And Danny and Debbie and I were just, I mean, absolutely head to toe in mud. And we got in the back, in the bed of the truck, so as to not make the inside of the truck messy. And I think it was Bootsy that drove us to Debbie's apartment so that we could all shower off. But there's a photo of that somewhere.
Well, and for people that didn't go to Debbie's apartment, there was like a massive
group shower.
Yeah.
With all that mud, oh my God. People would play beer pong, and then they would like they would miss a shot, and the ping pong ball. Like I knew that I was an adult. I knew that like my old days of carnival were over when like I was playing with Mark Estes, and we were playing beer pong, and it was like the second time the ball hit that mess on the floor. I was like, I'm gonna get like fucking tuberculosis or something. I'm out. I can't do this anymore. No, I'm done.
Mudsliding was the best part. You know, if you're not going to win and you're not going to place and you're not going to show, it was an amazing moment. I had just slid down the hill in my boxer shorts with a bottle of champagne in my hand, and the CMU cop extended his hand to help me up off of the ground.
Yeah, they
were very tolerant.
Oh yeah, I mean, at least Carnival Weekend, the CMU cops were really there to like keep everybody relatively safe, mostly protect us from ourselves. They didn't really try to stop us from doing much of anything if it wasn't overtly dangerous.
Wow. Well, thank you. This is been a lot of fun. I think this is going to be a really enjoyable episode. Any last thoughts or words or anything?
Well, I mean, what I would say to every undergrad is if you ever have a chance to build a buggy, build one. It's an amazing experience. You learn so much. You screw up so much.
Yeah, build. I mean, and if you can't find someone, I mean, you guys can do, like, if you're a student at CMU, you can build a buggy. We did. And we're idiots. I mean, you can do it. It's just work.
Yeah. If you have a chance to build, build.
If you have a chance to drive, drive.
Yeehaw. That was an absolute blast. Hope you all enjoyed that as much as I did. As always, we'd like it if you want to share your opinions on this or any other episode in our Discord. Just go to cmubuggy.org. That's cmubuggy.org. And you'll get right into the Discord and can chat there. I know Ian, who was on this episode, real active there. So you can even converse with him about what it was like being on Shoot the Shit or shit in general. anyways, fun episode. This season has been flying by faster than SDC on a Hill 5. See, I say nice things about SDC every now and then. We only have one episode left, and then next week's Carnival. Next week's episode, going to be a lot of fun talking with the winning drivers from all three men's, women's, all gender teams last year. So get to go on a trip down memory lane, get some really cool insights into what race day was like last year. Some thoughts on kind of where Buggy's headed. Not going to want to miss that one. We also will have the WRCT race day preview at some point on Wednesday afternoon. I don't know when. I should know. I think I'm hosting it. Info will be on cmubuggy.org, as will all the good stuff about race day. So thank you, as always, for tuning in. Thank you, especially as always, to Rachel Schmidt for making this possible, producing it, pulling everything together. Hope you all enjoyed it, and we will catch you next week on Shoot the Shit.